And we're holding on Memvav Amud Bey's last words. In the Mishnah, we had a machloikas, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, about what you do if you're baking dough, in the morning, Ellie, if you're baking dough, which is tamei, on Pesach, what do you do as far as taking challah from it? So if it was tahor, there'd be no problem. You can take the challah and give it to the kohen because the kohen can eat it. The problem is it's tamei, so therefore the kohen can't eat it. You can't burn it because you can't burn kodshim on Yom Tov. You can't leave it on the face of it. You can't leave it because it's going to end up becoming chametz. So what do you do? So we had Rabbi Eliezer saying that you go ahead and bake it. And what we said is that Rabbi Eliezer holds of the concept of hoyil, that since there is a way for it to be mutter, which we said either because you could, after you designate one matzah from the Rabbi Eliezer, first of all, holds that you could designate challah after it's baked. You don't have to do it as dough. And since now you have the problem that how do you bake it on Yom Tov if you're not allowed to eat it? So Rabbi Eliezer, so we said in the Gemara, Rabbi Eliezer would say the concept of hoyil, that since two possibilities. The gears that we have in front of us in the Gemara is that the person could be matir neder afterwards, and therefore the piece that he designated as challah, the matzah that he designated as challah, goes back to being not challah, goes back to being tevel, and eventually he has to separate a different piece for that purpose. Okay, so each piece could have been the one, so each piece could be one that he's ultimately able to eat. That was one way. And then at the end of the sugya, Rashi mentions another possibility. He says he doesn't like that one because it doesn't fit with the flow of the sugya. So he says that the hoyil is rather that each loaf, each piece of matzah, you could conceivably break off a piece and combine all those pieces together for challah, and therefore you can make it work that way. Therefore, you're allowed to bake it. Rabbi Yeshua, we said, disagrees with that concept. He doesn't hold of hoyil, but he says, on the other hand, you don't have to worry about this dough becoming chametz. It's not yours anyway, so there's no bayudo or bayumatze. So you set it aside, and if it becomes chametz, then it's not your problem. And then after Yom Tov is over, when it's chol hamoed, then you can burn it. We had an admission also Ben Beseda saying that you put it in cold water, so he's not really disagreeing on the din with Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. He's giving a practical piece of advice what to do if you did separate it as dough. Well, he's agreeing with Rabbi Yeshua that you can't bake it, but he's agreeing with Rabbi Eliezer that you would be over on Bayura Bayumatsa, therefore the only thing to do is drop it in cold water and hope that that keeps it from becoming chametz. I didn't mention, by the way, yesterday that there's a couple of interesting points that the Rishonim make about this. Some of them are in Tosfos and Amud Aleph. All of this is talking about if it's challah in Eretz Yisrael. If it's challah in Chutz La'aretz, in principle, you are actually allowed to have, even if the challah is tamei, in principle, a young kohen who's never had a problem of tumas keri, or an older kohen who's tovold, is technically allowed to eat it. Another possibility is you can also be mevatel it. So therefore, so with chalas chutz la'aretz, you have much less of a problem. You could actually separate it and give it to the kohen. I mean, nowadays I don't think there's any places where the kohenim actually eat challah, where the kohenim eat challah chutz la'aretz. We know we always burn it, but in principle, al pi halacha, they would be allowed to. So maybe in this case you could do that. Also, the Ran points out, if you have a choice in the first place, don't make the dough in a large enough batch to be chayv and challah in the first place. If you know the dough is tamei anyhow, make it in smaller batches, and then, of course, you don't have an issue in the first place. Okay, so that was the Mishnah. Then from that, we got to a discussion in the Gemara on the general question of hoyil, as it applies to if a person prepares food on Yom Tov to be eaten on a weekday. So Rav Chista had said that Rav Chista had said that we don't say hoyil. Now we could conceivably, we're talking about it's after he finished his meal, so he's not going to eat any more today, so therefore this food is going to end up being eaten on weekdays. Rav Chista says that's reason enough to punish him with Malkus, because he was over on the Malacha of cooking on Yom Tov. And it's not for the purpose of Yom Tov, it's for the purpose of Chol. Rabba agrees with that basic concept, but he says there is the concept of hoyil you could conceivably have that guests will show up and he'd be able to give it to them. Which means, as we said yesterday, that Rabba would agree that if it's too late in the day, that there's no way that this is going to be finished and ready to eat before Yom Tov ends, then he'd agree that it would be Osir and Chayav Malkus. So then we said, what about Erev Tavshilin? We said Erev Tavshilin is different because there you're preparing from Yom Tov to Shabbos, and Rav Chista is saying Midaraisa, that actually would be Mutter. It's only Dirabbanan, not. Therefore, Erev Tavshilin can take care of that. we have the case where a person has a dangerous animal, where a person has a dangerously sick animal, and he's allowed to shecht it on Yom Tov. And the idea is, because Rav Chista says, because it is actually for Yom Tov, because knowing that he's going to lose the whole value of the animal if he doesn't shecht it, he forces himself to eat a kazayas of it. And once he forces himself, once he's going to eat a kazayas, then that justifies the shechting of the whole animal. Okay. So now continuing on that discussion. So Rabba has a question for Rav Chista. We learn in a Mishnah in Menachos, lechem aponim necha l'tisha, the lechem aponim, now normally, the way it worked normally was that the lechem aponim is baked 1 week, and then it's kept on, it has to be kept on the shulchan the entire week, it has to be placed on the shulchan on Shabbos, and then it's taken off the shulchan the next Shabbos, and distributed among the Kohenim, and they eat it, and they offer the shnei bezichel avona on the Mizbeach first. So the lechem aponim, the minimum it can ever be eaten after it's baked, is on the 9th day after it's baked, la'asara, or the 10th day, or la'achad also, or the 11th day, like pochus for la'yoser, it's never less or never more than that, it's never earlier than the 9th day, never later than the 11th. You have in Parshas Emor, when you have the Makalel over there, the Ben Ish Mitzri, actually related to this week's parasha, because the Ish Mitzri who was his father is the very same Ish Mitzri that Moshe killed in this week's parasha, because as Rashi says that he had relations with Dasan's wife Shlomis Bas Divri. So this Ben Ish Mitzri was their son. Later on in Parshas Emor, he blasphemes Hashem and he gets executed for it. So Rashi mentions over there that he was making fun of the lechem aponim and saying, how is it possible that you would never serve a king 9-day-old bread? How you talk him that was serving it to Hashem? He doesn't realize or he doesn't care about the nest that it would stay fresh on the shulchan for the entire week. Anyway, Ketzad, so the Mishnah says, what are the scenarios? How do you have 9, 10, or 11 days? Kedauker Letisha, the normal situation is you eat it on the 9th day. They bake it on Friday of 1 week, and they put it on the shulchan the next day, and then it stays on the shulchan an entire week. So Friday, Shabbos, and an entire week from Sunday to Shabbos equals 9 days. It's 9 days in the same sense as, for example, a bris is on the 8th day. We don't mean, in other words, that 9 full 24-hour periods have passed. We mean that it's the 9th calendar day since lechem aponim was baked. Nefer be'erev Shabbos. So it's usually baked on erev Shabbos. Nechal be Shabbos, and it's eaten the following Shabbos, a week later. Letisha, so that's the 9th day. Chal Yom Tov Lias be'erev Shabbos. What happens if Yom Tov comes out on erev Shabbos? Now, they can't bake on Yom Tov something that's not needed for Yom Tov, which is going to be the point of Rabba's question to Rav Chista. So then they have to bake it on erev Yom Tov on Thursday. So therefore, Nechal Shabbos, La Sara. So then it's baked on the 10th day. They bake it on Thursday, erev Yom Tov, and it's eaten a week later on Shabbos. Shnei Yom Tovim, Rosh Hashanah. What happens if you have the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah on Thursday and Friday? Then Nechal Shabbos, La Achadosa. Then it has to be baked on Wednesday, and then they have to then it comes out. It's on the 11th day. Now, how do you have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah in your Shalayim where the Sanhedrin is sitting? So Rashi mentions the famous thing, Rashi and Tosfos mention the famous thing that the Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah and in Beitzah, that you have if Edom came in a mincha l'mayla, that usually the Edom would come in the morning or at latest in the very early afternoon, and Beis Din would hear them out, and if everything worked out, then that day was Rosh Hashanah, and if not, if they knew the moon's not going to be visible, then Elul is 30 days long, and then Rosh Hashanah is the next day. But you have the scenario where the moon was visible, but Edom showed up only after Mincha. So because of one time there was a problem where the Edom hadn't shown up by that time, and they weren't sure what to do as far as the Korbanos and as far as the Shira. Should they bring the Korban Musaf? Should they sing the Shira of Rosh Hashanah or of the regular day of the week, etc. So therefore, the Chachamim made a takana that if Edom come in a Mincha or a Maila, we don't accept them. But nevertheless, as the Gemara explains in Beitzah, you still have that day still is considered Kodesh because Midin Torah, they should have accepted the Edim, and the next day is also considered Kodesh. So there you have a case where you have a two-day Rosh Hashanah even in your Shalayim itself. And this is why, by the way, it's based on this concept that we have. This is in Perek Echad of Rambam. It's in Hilchos Kodesh HaChodesh, and this point about Rosh Hashanah being 2 days is going to be in one of the upcoming Purakim on Shabbos, on Friday or on Shabbos, I think. So that's why even nowadays in Eretz Yisrael and even in Yerushalayim, they always have 2 days Rosh Hashanah. Because of that point where sometimes you would have that if the Edom came after Mincha, then they would do that, then they would do that. So that's how you'd have 2 days Rosh Hashanah. Rashi also makes a point, if you think about it, if the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are Thursday and Friday, then the next Shabbos is Yom Kippur. On the face of it. So how are they eating? They can't eat it on Yom Kippur itself. So Rashi says two possibilities. One is that if they had a 2 day Rosh Hashanah like that, now when we have 2 days Rosh Hashanah nowadays, what we say is those are the first and second days of Tishrei. So therefore, if the first of Tishrei is Thursday, then the 10th is going to be a week later Shabbos. But Rashi says it didn't have to be that way. If you had that they're making 2 days Rosh Hashanah because the Edom hadn't come by Mincha, then actually what it would be is the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah would be the 30th of Elul and the 1st of Tishrei. Well, then it comes out the 1st of Tishrei is Friday. So then it comes out Yom Kippur is Sunday a week and 2 days after that. Nowadays, of course, you don't have that kvius, but in those days you could have that. So Shabbos is Erev Yom Kippur. It's the 9th of Tishrei. So they can eat the lechem upon him then. Rashi says, actually, never mind that. Also, even if we were to say that we would say that Rosh Hashanah then was like now, the first and second of Tishrei, still, the point is, when would they eat the lachem upon him? They would eat it on Motzei Yom Kippur, Motzei Shabbos. Okay, in terms of halacha, usually we would call that the 12th day, because you'd have Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, that's 3 days. A whole week from Sunday to Shabbos is another 7, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, a whole week, makes 11 days, and then Motzei Shabbos is already considered Sunday, lahalacha, and it would be the 12th day. But no, Rashi says, here we're talking about Kodshim, and by Kodshim we know the rule, halayla holachacha ayoyim, the night follows the day. So therefore, it comes out that in terms of Kodshim, it is, in effect, they're eating it on Shabbos, which is the 10th of Tishrei, which comes out to be, therefore, the 11th day since they made it. So it all works out. Rashi mentions one more point, which is an interesting point. Rashi says, why are we mentioning specifically the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah is because at the time of Lechem Aponim, there were no other times when you had 2 days Yom Tov. An interesting point that Achronim ask is, what does that imply? So when there's no Lechem upon him, there are 2 days of Yom Tov? So there is, in fact, the Minchas Alozer, for example, talks about that, and then there are some other Achronim that talk about that maybe after there's no Sanhedrin and there's no Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael and most of the Jewish people are in Golus, maybe you are required to keep 2 days Yom Tov even in Eretz Yisrael. And the Minchas Alozer, in fact, mentions favorably some people in Yerushalayim who would go around in Yom Tov clothes and avoid Malacha B'Fahesia on the second day of Yom Tov, even though they're not required to. There's other possibilities. Tosfos earlier in the Masechta, in the first Perek, mentioned that since people came from all over the place to Yerushalayim for Aliyah L'Regel, so therefore they couldn't just have the local minig in Yerushalayim because people would wonder, wait, why are we doing it this way when back home we do it a different way? So therefore they might have to keep in Yerushalayim the minhagim of other places as well. Tosfos says they gather after the Mekodemus Shinogu Bahen Isser. So that's another possibility. There might have been, at least hypothetically, that they would have to keep 2 days Yom Tov even in Yerushalayim for the sake of the Olah L'Regel, but Rashi is saying that they didn't. And then there's an interesting point. The Chassam Sofer mentions in one of his Truvas and in his Chedushim, he says, when I was younger, I once passed through Prague and had the opportunity to see the Noid of Yehuda. The Noid of Yehuda passed away when the Chassam Sofer was 30 years old. So this happened when the Chassam Sofer was a bacher. And the Chassam Sofer brings up this Rashi, and he says maybe the vote is because we, generally speaking, Ibur Chadoshim, Kiddush HaChodesh had to take place in Eretz Yisrael. But again, as the Rambam talks about in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, if the Chachamim are not able to be in Eretz Yisrael, and you have a great Chacham outside Eretz Yisrael, and there's nobody of his caliber in Eretz Yisrael, then he's allowed to do it in Chutz La'aretz. You have an example at the end of Yevamos, it mentions Rabbi Akiva did that. So therefore, you could have now if they're being Kaveya Chadoshim in Chutz La'aretz, then anybody who's in Yerushalayim is not going to know whether the people in Yerushalayim are in the same situation as the people in Golos usually are, namely that they have to keep 2 days Yom Tov because they're not sure when the Beis Din in Bavel or whatever it is was Kaveya the Chodesh, and the Noid of Yehuda liked that and then said, very nice. Whatever the case, the point is, getting back to the Gemara, So again, if you have the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, Thursday and Friday, then they had to bake the lachem upon them on Wednesday. If it was a 1 day Yom Tov on Friday, they'd have to bake it on Thursday. Otherwise, they'd bake it on Friday. Either way, it's eaten next week Shabbos. And the Mishnah says, why do they need to do that? Lefisha ain't a doicha, lo yisa Shabbos. Because baking, preparing and baking the lachem upon him is not doicha Shabbos, specifically baking it, is not doicha Shabbos or Yom Tov, so therefore they had to do it on Friday or on Erev Yom Tov. Now, Rava says to Rav Chista, the Amit Sorche Shabbos Nasim Yom Tov. Now, in the previous discussion, when I asked you about how it is that an Erev Tavshilin can work, if Midaraisi you're not allowed to prepare on Yom Tov for another day, then how is it Mutter? And you answered, Rav Chista, that it works because Shabbos and Yom Tov are considered one Kedusha, so therefore Midaraisa it actually would be Mutter, and it's only Midrabanan that it's not, and therefore the Eid of Tavshilin helps with that. Well, we know you don't have Shavus, you don't have Dirabanans of Shabbos and Yom Tov don't apply in the Beis Mikdash. So the Amit Socha Shabbos Nasim Yom Tov. So if you say that by the way, Tosfos actually mentions over here an interesting point. If so, let's say they knew that the first day of Rosh Hashanah could be on Thursday, and we're saying if the Edom don't come till Mincha, then Yom Tov is going to be Friday as well. So therefore, they would have to prepare in advance and make the lachem upon him on Wednesday. What happens then? Tosfos says, if in the end the Edom did show up in time, and therefore only the 1 day Thursday is Rosh Hashanah. So now you have, they bake the lachem upon him 2 days early. So Tosfos says, okay, what they would do is they'd be poida the first lachem upon him, and then they'd bake new ones on Friday, because you still want to have, as much as possible, that the lachem upon him should be made as close as possible to when it's going to be eaten. You have the nest that keeps hot on the shulchan, but still you don't want to have to rely on that nest more than necessary. Okay. So anyway, getting back to the Gemara, so Rabba says again, the Amit Sorche Shabbos Nasim the Yom Tov. If you say that Sorche Shabbos can be done on Yom Tov, and therefore you're saying that's the mechanism by which Erev Tavshilin works, because Midaraisa it's allowed, only Midrabanan is it not, and therefore the Erev Tavshilin helps with that. Well, in the Beis Mikdash there are no Midrabanans, there are no Shavus, Amai Lo Docha Yom Tov. So according to you, why shouldn't it be Docha Yom Tov? Amalei, so Rav Chista answers, because the difference is Shvus Kroiva Hitiru, Shvus Rechoika Lo Hitiru. The Chachamim are matter. Yes, you know what? You're right. Dirabanans don't apply in the Beis Mikdash, but only when it's a Dirabanan that's needed for that Yom Tov or that Shabbos itself. Then we can say the Chachamim are matter it, as we had examples at the end of Eruvin. But Shavus Rechoika, here where it's needed for a week later, because after all, you don't eat the lachem upon him that day. You eat the lachem upon him, you eat the lachem upon him a week later. So that's a Shavus Rechoika. It's not even the day after Yom Tov, it's a whole week later. So then Lo Yitiru, the Chachamim are not going to be matter that kind of Shavus, and therefore that's why they have to bake the lachem upon him on Erev Yom Tov. Actually, Tosfos has a different understanding. That Tosfos says it's not a matter of that Rav Chista said it's mutter on Yom Tov for Shabbos because they're kedusha achas. Rather, Rav Chista was saying that when you need it for Shabbos, where if you can't do it on Yom Tov, you're not going to be able to do it again, then it's considered like Eichel Nefesh of Yom Tov. So therefore, Rabba is saying to Rav Chista that I hold that you're only allowed it when you can eat it on Yom Tov itself, when we can say hoyo. And here we can't, obviously, because the lachem upon him themselves can't be eaten on Yom Tov. They have to be placed on the shulchan and kept there until the following Shabbos. But you, Rav Chista, are holding that anything that has to be done before Shabbos, because otherwise it can't be done on Shabbos, is allowed to be done on Yom Tov, and we don't even need hoyo. Then over here, you need to do it over here, because you need to do it. You need to bake this lachem upon him and put it on the shulchan, and it needs to be there for an entire week. So why does it work? And the answer is it only works when you have it's on Yom Tov for the day after it, not where it's for a week later. Masiv Rav Mari. Let's skip a few lines. So the question is, Rav Shimon Gamliel de Oma Meshum Rav Shimon Askan. Okay, how then do we understand the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel, who continues in that Mishnah in the name of Rav Shimon Ben Askan, Doiches Yom Tov Ve'ena Doiches Yom Tzoim, that baking the lechem upon him is Doiches Yom Tov. He holds that you are allowed to bake it on Yom Tov. So he says, never mind all this business about that you have to bake it on Erev Yom Tov or Erev Rosh Hashanah or whatever. You'd be allowed to bake it on Yom Tov itself. The only thing that it doesn't override is Yom Kippur. Because doing Malacha on Yom Kippur would be, because Yom Tov at least, Oichel Nefesh is Mutter. So therefore, so even if it's a Shavuos Rechoika, fine. Again, a Shavuos, the Chachamim aren't being gozer on, and it is ultimately needed for Oichel Nefesh, so it's not for the Shabbos coming after this Yom Tov, but it's for Shabbos a week later, and according to Rav Shimon ben Askan, that's good enough. Only Yom Kippur, you don't have a heter of Malachas Oichel Nefesh, so therefore you can't do that. So only in that case would you have to bake it on Thursday Erev of Yom Kippur. So according to him, my ikla meimar. So according to him, what are you going to say? How do you understand how you're allowed to bake the lachem upon him on Yom Kippur? According to him, so again, Tosfos types out the question. Rabbi is saying, I hold that exactly that point is the machlokas of the chachamim and Rav Shimon Gamliel. The Tanakhama holds that midaraisa. Food cannot be prepared on Shabbos for Yom Tov afterwards. The only way it works to prepare food on Yom Tov is on the basis of Hoyel. And here there's no Hoyel because you can't eat it on Yom Tov. So therefore, I would say that's what the Tanakhama is saying. Therefore, you can't bake it on Yom Tov. And Reb Shimon Gamliel, in the name of Reb Shimon ben Askan, would be saying that you could because they hold that Sochei Shabbos could be done on Yom Tov. But you who are saying that you are allowed to prepare on Shabbos for Yom Tov for Shabbos Midaraisa, so then how are you going to explain? So why does the Tanakhama say that you can't? Also, Tosfos says another possibility. If you say that they're arguing on a hoyil where you could be poyder this lechem upon him before you put it on the shulchan, then fine. The argument could be: is that do we apply that kind of hoyil? Because it's not very common to do that. But you're saying that the reason is because shvus kreiva versus shvus rechoika. Do you in fact think that that's what the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon Gamliel are arguing about? So the answer is yes. Bahal pligi, yes, exactly. That's the machlokas. Mar sava shvus kreiva itiru, shvus rechoika lo itiru. One says that they're only being matter a shvus kreiva, only where it's needed for when the next day is Shabbos, not where it's needed for Shabbos a week later. Or mar sava shvus rechoika nami itiru. Whereas Reb Shimon Askan would be saying that it's even mutter even if it's a shvus rechoika. So you'd be allowed to bake the lechem upon him on Yom Tov, according to him, even though you're not eating it until a week later, Shabbos. Okay, so no contradiction. So Rabba and Rav Chista can each understand the opinions each in their own way. Rabba can understand that the only reason to be matir to bake on Yom Tov where it's not needed for Yom Tov itself is on the grounds of a hoyel, and a hoyel wouldn't apply over here because you can't eat the lechem upon him on the day it's baked. You have to place it on the shulchan and eat it a week later. And Rav Chista would understand that you're always allowed to prepare on Yom Tov for Shabbos. You don't need hoyel. Even if the food cannot be eaten on Yom Tov itself, it's fine as long as it can be eaten on Shabbos. But midrabanan, we would say that doesn't apply when it's not for that Shabbos, but rather for a later Shabbos. But fine. So then the Tanakhama would be saying that we apply that Zeta Dirabanon even in this case. Therefore, you have to bake it Erev Yom Tov. Whereas Rav Shimon ben Askan would be saying that we don't apply it, and therefore you're allowed to bake the lachem upon him on Yom Tov. Okay. Masiv Rav Mari. So Rav Mari says I have another contradiction. The same Mishnah in Menachos says Shtei Alechem, the Shtei Alechem that are offered on Shavuos. They're never eaten earlier than the second day after they're baked, and never later than the third day. Kate said, so how does that? Nefes Erev Yom Tov, Necholos Yom Tov L'Shnayim. The usual case is they bake it Erev Shavuos, and they eat it on Shavuos after they offer the Kvasim and the other Korbanos with it. So that's the second day, Erev Yom Tov, Yom Tov. Chal Yom Tov Bias Achar Shabbos, and if Shavuos comes out on Sunday, Necholos the Yom Tov L'Shloisha, then they're eaten on the third day because they're baked on Friday, and they're eaten on Sunday, which is Yom Tov. And again, the Mishnah says, Lafisha en doicha, lo yasa Shabbos, lo yasa Yom Tov. Because, again, the baking of the Shtei Alechem is not doicha Shabbos and not Yom Tov. So now the question is, why is it not doicha Yom Tov? You're eating them on Yom Tov. By the way, Rashi mentions a point that he had Gersois, and well, actually, the Gersois are going to be in the next piece, rather. Never mind. So now the question is, you're eating them on Yom Tov itself, you're eating them on Shavuos, why can't you bake them on Yom Tov? The Amet Sorcha Shabbos Nasim Yom Tov, if you, Rav Chista, are saying that Midaraisa, you're always allowed to make Sorcha Shabbos on Yom Tov, even if there's no hoil, even if you can't eat it that day, Then hashta the Shabbos for Yom Tov Shari. So if you're even allowed to make something for Shabbos on Yom Tov, according to Rav Chista, the Yom Tov be Yom Tov Miboya, would it need to be said that you're allowed to make food on Yom Tov that you're going to be eating later that same day on Yom Tov? So why do they have to bake the Shnei Alechem on Erev Shavuos? Why can't they bake it on Shavuos itself? Now, Rashi points out, here we can't apply hoyul, Rashi says, because, after all, when can you eat the Shtei Alechem? Only after you shecht and sprinkle the blood of the kvasim. So therefore, those Shtei Alechem, there's no hoyul, you can't eat them yet. So therefore, it's considered, in effect, like, even though you eating it later on Yom Tov. So according to Rabbah, in other words, we can understand why you can't bake it on Yom Tov. Hoyol doesn't apply over here, and therefore you have to bake them on Erev Yom Tov. But according to Rav Chista, who doesn't hold of Hoyol, he says that you're always allowed to bake on Yom Tov for Shabbos. So for sure, you're allowed to bake on Yom Tov for Yom Tov. So in that case, why do you have to bake it on Erev Yom Tov? So the answer is shiny hosam do'amakro lochem. The difference is because when the Pasuk says that you're allowed to do Melechas Eichel Nefesh on Yom Tov, the Pasuk says, Hu levada ye'osa lochem, meaning lochem v'loy legavaya. It only applies when you're making food for yourself, not when you're making food for Hashem. Now, in this case, yes, the Kohenim end up eating the Shtei Alechem. And by the way, this answer will work for the Lechem upon him as well. Now we don't have to say the answer that we're talking about Shavuos Kroiv or Shavuos Rechoika. Now we can use this answer that instead, that both the Lechem upon him and the Shtei Alechem are Lagavoya. They're both offered to Hashem. Now, they're not actually brought on the Mizbeach, but nevertheless, they're still considered a Korban. And the Kohenim, the expression is Meshulchan Gavoya Kazahu. It's not food that intrinsically belongs to them. It belongs to Hekdesh, belongs to the Mizbeach. Hashem grants it to them to eat, so therefore it's not lochem. So that's why I would say that that's an exception. Usually you are allowed to bake on Yom Tov for Shabbos even without resorting to hoyol, but in this case, if it's not lochem, then therefore not. So the question is, although Reb Shimon Gamliel d'amar Reb Shimon Asgan doiches Yom Tov, what about again? Reb Shimon Gamliel argues in the name of Reb Shimon Asgan and says that baking the Shtei Alechem is doiche Yom Tov. So according to him, you could do it on Yom Tov itself. So the only scenario, so according to him, there's no scenario where you would ever need. Well, there is, I guess. If Shavuos comes out on Shabbos, then fine, they can't bake it on Shabbos. Then they'd have to bake it on Erev Shabbos. But otherwise, there's no case where you would have to. Otherwise, there's no case where you'd have to bake it on Erev Yom Tov. So according to him, my ikal meimar. So what are you going to say? What does he do with the word lachem? So here Rashi mentions a cute point that he had Gersois in front of him where Reb Shimon Gamliel again says that it's not doiches yom atzoim. So Rashi said, what yom atzoim? What yom atzoim? Yom Kippur was 4 months after Shavuos. Tosfos and various collections of Tosfos, standard Tosfos and Menachos, Tosfos and Abeinu Peretz over here says that actually what it is because they're talking about the whole thing it mentioned in the Mishnah, both the Shtei Alechem and the Lechem Aponim. So yeah, when it comes to Shtei Alechem, it's not relevant to talk about Yom Kippur, but when it comes to Lechem Aponim, it is, because those are all year round. So therefore, when he mentions that it's not Doiches Yom Atzoim, he's talking generically about both things in the Mishnah. So therefore, the Gersa would work after all. Anyway, whatever the case, according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, how does he understand that? Why are you allowed to bake it on Yom Tov, according to Reb Chista, or according to Rabbah, for that matter, if Lachem should prevent that? The answer is, Sova Laka Abashol, Dama Lachem, means Lachem V'loy L'Nachrim. He would understand the Lachem. Like Abashol says, that it means that Lachem means you're not allowed to bake or cook food on Yom Tov for Goyim. But you would be allowed to, L'Gavoya. So therefore, according to him, good, you could bake the lechem upon him, or the shtei lechem on Yom Tov, because ultimately the Kohenim are going to eat it, and therefore it's considered lechem. Okay. Fine. Well, it says elsewhere, yeah, of course, it says in the shteh lechem, the lechem upon him, yeah, it says clearly, we say every Shabbos and davening, v'hoysel aron olavonim, v'achalor b'machem kaddish. Nobody said there was. Abishol is saying, you're not allowed to, and this is, by the way, the halacha, you're not allowed to cook on Yom Tov for goy to eat. There's, in fact, a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. You're not even allowed to invite a goy for a meal on Yom Tov, because there's a concern we're going to learn about in Masechta Beitza, eventually, Be'ez Hashem, exactly, Shema Yarba B'Shvila. You might add extra food for his sake, and then you would be over on the Issur of Yom Tov. On Shabbos, you're allowed to, because you can't cook on Shabbos. But, no, the point is, in other words, Abishol would say, and then we're saying, Rav Shimon Askan agrees with this, that when you're making food, that when you're making food for goyim to eat, you can't do that on Yom Tov. But if you're making food, legavoya, you're making it for the Bes Mikdash, and koyim meshulchan gavoya kazachu, they are getting it from Hashem's table, that you would be allowed to bake on Yom Tov. Therefore, you're allowed to bake the shtei lechem on Yom Tov. Because it does fall under lechem, yeah.
Question.
Yeah.
What? How can you say that lechem means for the goyim, when we know the lechem apanim, it
doesn't mean lechem means not for the goyim. That's the point.
Not for the goyim. Right. That's what I meant. Not for the goyim. When you know that the lechem apanim is specifically a breach between Hashem and the Jewish people.
That's what Eli was just asking. If lechem apanim is specifically for the goyim. No. Abishol is saying a more general thing. You're allowed to bake on Yom Tov, but who are you allowed to bake for? Are you allowed to bake on Yom Tov? Are you allowed to bake bread on Yom Tov, which is going to be eaten by goyim? Abishol is telling us no. Are you allowed to bake bread on Yom Tov that is going to be used, like gavoya, that is going to be used as a korban, and then the koyim are going to get part of it? Abishol says yes, the chachamim say no. Are you allowed to bake bread on Yom Tov for yourself and your family and other Jews to eat? For sure, yes. That's what we mean. In other words, when we're talking about when the pasuk is saying, hu levadbe ya'osa lachem, you're allowed to do melechas oichel nefesh on Yom Tov, on whose behalf are you allowed to do it? You're definitely allowed to do it when it's something that Jews are going to eat. Are you allowed to do it for the sake of a goy? And are you allowed to do it for the sake of gavoya? That's what we're saying. It has nothing to do with the lachem upon him specifically. We're talking more generally.
How would you think that you can break Yom Tov for a goy? I mean,
why not? If you didn't have the word lachem, because if you didn't have the word lachem, we have the concept of mitoich. Right? We have the concept of mitoich, which we haven't really discussed in the sugya, although Tosfos mentions it at one point in the sugya, that there's a concept. We know the halacha is like this hill. Mitoich shahutru l'tzorech, hutru nami shaloi l'tzorech. Once you're allowed to do malachas eichel nefesh on Yom Tov for the purpose of preparing food, then you're allowed to do it even where it's not specifically for the purpose of preparing food. An example is, according to Beis Shammai, in Beitz over there, you would only be allowed, you're allowed to carry outside on Yom Tov, but only food. Whereas Vesilil says, once you're allowed to carry food, you're also allowed to carry a baby, you're also allowed to carry a machzer, etc., etc. So if you didn't have the word lachem, you would think, I'm allowed to bake on Yom Tov, therefore it shouldn't matter who's going to be eating the food. No, therefore we say lachem means v'loy l'gavoya and v'loy l'nochrin.
It's really stretching it, I think.
It's not really stretching it. That's how it is. We would have said mitoich were it not for that word in the pasuk. Okay. Onward. Sholach le Rav Chista le Rabba b'yad Rav Acha bar Rav Huna. So now, Rav Chista says, okay, so all this time, Rabba or Rav Mori have been asking questions on Rav Chista. Now Rav Chista says it's time to turn the tables. Let's ask a question on Rabba. So he sends a message with Rav Acha bar Rav Huna, meaning Rashi says he explained to him clearly this question that he wants him to say it over to Rabba in his name. In other words, he's not Sam sending some person off the street or whatever with a question. He wants to make sure the question is going to be fully understood. So Rabba is going to have to answer it. So he picked a Talmid Chacham to be his messenger. So he says like this. So you, Rabbi, are telling me so far that we say hoyl, and therefore we say you're allowed to bake on Yom Tov. The only way to bake on Yom Tov for Shabbos is only if you could have eaten it on Yom Tov, and then Midrabanan was saying you can't, and therefore you need the aid of Tashilin as a hecker. But in other words, you, Rabbi, are saying, it comes out, by the way, so far, if you think about it, there's a kula in each of, there's a kula and a chumrah in each of their positions. According to Rav Chisda, we don't say hoyo. Therefore, we said to begin with, if he bakes on Yom Tov for a weekday, then he's chayav malchus, which is a chumrah. Whereas Rabbah would say not. That's because of hoyo. But on the other hand, what happens? When it comes to preparing on Yom Tov for Shabbos, then the other way around, then Rabbah is makel. Then Rabbah is saying that midaraisa you actually would be allowed to, and therefore there's no problem. Rabbah would say only if you can say hoyo. And if you can't, then you would be also midaraisa to be preparing on Shabbos for you, on Yom Tov for the next day Shabbos. So anyway, the point is, you grab a hold of hoyo, that can get a person out of malchus if he's preparing food on Yom Tov for a weekday. The problem is, we learn in a Mishnah in Makkos. The Mishnah is giving there different examples where a person can be doing one action and be chai of multiple malchus for it. So one example is Yesh Chodesh Telem Echad. You can have a person plows one furrow in a field, v'chai of an alemishim shmoin alavin, and he's over for it on 8 lavins, so he's getting 8 malchus. So the case is like this: a chodesh b'shurd of a b'chamer. He's plowing with an ox and a donkey together, so he's being over on the isur. He's being over on the isur. Le'sachrish b'shurd of a b'chamer yachdav kalayim. Yeah. Number two, v'hein mukdashin. Number two, those animals are kodshim. There are two different kinds of kodshim, Rashi explains. The shur is kodshim is be'ach. It's an animal that was designated as a korban, so therefore he's being over on the isur with that. And there's an issue, it says specifically by b'chur, and we apply it from a b'chur to everywhere else. Then you have the chamur, is obviously not a korban, but it's kodshe bedek abayis. It belongs to hefdish. So therefore he's being over on the issue of me'ilah. So far we have 3 lavim. Now Rashi points out, we're only listing different lavim. You can have, for example, let's say he uses 10 oxen, and he's going to, all of them are kodshim, and he's going to be chayav for each one, but we're not counting that, because that's just 10 times the same isur. We want to find where there are 8 different isurim, 8 different lavim that he's being over on. So far we have 3. Number 4, the kilayim v'kerem. There is kilayim in a vineyard over there. Now, what he's doing with this plowing, one thing, there's a concept called hamachapa v'kilayim loyke. You can have, a person can be chayev for kilayim by actually planting grape seeds and wheat or vegetables or whatever together. You also have, let's say you have seeds of them lying on the ground, and you come by with dirt and cover it up. That's called a machapa, because now you're promoting the growth of it. Now that the machapa means covering. Machapa means covering. So now, by covering it with dirt, now you're stimulating that it's going to start growing. So a person is chai of malchus for that. So that's the case over here. With his plowing, he's covering up seeds of kilayim that are there, and therefore he's chai for that. Ushvius, this is during Shemitah, so there's an isser to plow. Tosfos points out there is an opinion that says that actually plowing on Shavuos during Shemitah is not Chayav Malchus. So therefore, he would understand, again, that's another thing of Machapa over here, that we're talking about, that besides that he's Chayav for Kalayim, he's also Chayav for planting during Shemitah, which that definitely, the Pasuk says clearly, Sod Choloi Sizra. It's Machlokas at the beginning of Moed Katan has a long sugya about the Dinim of Shemitah, because in certain ways, the Dinim of Shemitah and the Dinim of what you're allowed and not allowed to do during Shemitah and what you're allowed and not allowed to do during Chol HaMoed are somewhat similar, and therefore at the beginning of Moed Katan, the Gemara goes into it for a few blot. So yeah. Anyway, so the point is, it's Shavuos, so he's over on plowing or planting during Shemitah, as the case may be. Rashi, in fact, says, you know, Rashi just says flat out that we're talking about that the Chodesh is a tolda of Zerea, because so he's covering up seeds, so and therefore he's chayev. Next, so far we're up to 5. Then the Yom Tov, this is taking place on Yom Tov, so he's being over on plowing on Yom Tov because the Malacha. Koyin, the Nazir, Abes HaTumah, and the 7th and 8th are that he's a Koyin, and he's a Nazir, and this is a place which is Tomei. A Koyin is not allowed to become Tomei Mess, and a Nazir is not allowed to become Tomei Mess. So therefore, altogether, he's getting 8 Malkus, because he was over on 8 different Lavin. Now, Rav Chisda is sending his message to Rabbah, v'yamunin hoyol. Now, if you, Rabbah, are telling me that we hold of hoyol, then we should say, acharisha loy l'chayev, then he should not be chayev at least for the plowing on Yom Tov, hoyol v'chozi l'kisri dam tzipur, because that dirt that he dug up with the plowing could be used for doing kisri adam for a bird. So therefore, and in other words, Rashi says we're not just talking about one bird. He did a lot of plowing, so a lot of dirt was dug up. But okay, if he has a lot of birds and a lot of wild animals where he needs to do kisi adam, then he would be able to use this. He would be able to use this dirt for it. Chickens, yeah, well, any kind of birds, yeah. Right. So Tosfos actually explains that we're talking about, let's say there's blood right there, because otherwise just find other blood. Otherwise find other dirt. Yeah. How can we be saying hoil? But over here we're talking about the blood is right there, and if he doesn't use that dirt right away, then the blood is gonna get absorbed into the ground and he's gonna miss the mitzvah. Also, Tosfos points out a little bit further. Now, usually, it's not that we're saying that you're allowed to plow on Yom Tov for that purpose. We know that Yom Tov is an esse and a lois esse, and an esse is an esse of kisi adam is not doicha, a lois esse of esse. So we're not saying that he should be allowed to plow, but we're saying that so Tosfos has a couple of possibilities. One of them being that maybe it would be considered, maybe the plowing would be malacha she'enet tzricha legufa. The same way as we learned in Masech the Shabbos, for example, a person digs a hole not for the sake of the hole, but for the sake of the dirt. It's a malacha she'enet tzricha legufa. Here you could argue the same thing. He's not plowing for the sake of the plowing. He's plowing for the sake of the dirt for kisi adam. That might be reason enough to pater him. There's more discussion. About that, and some of the Rishonim say that fine, even though esse is not doicha loisa seva esse, but b'di'evet, if the person did the esse and thereby was violating the loisa and esse, maybe at least the fact that he was doing it to be mekayim and esse would be enough to save him from malchus. So again, according to Rav Chisda is saying, according to me, there's no problem because we're talking about there is no blood over there of a bird, and we don't say hoyo because there might be. So therefore you have to be mechayev him. But you who are saying hoyo, there could be a birds and animals could be shechted over there, and then digging up the dirt had a purpose. So why are you giving him malchus for it? The same way as you're saying, Rabbah, that you could cook food on Yom Tov, and that if you cooked food on Yom Tov, even though it's already after your meal, Rabbi is saying, the person's not getting malchus for that because hoyel, because guests could come. The same thing over here, hoyel, you could say. So the answer is, Omer Papa Bashmul, Bavonim Kuzolis. The answer is, we're talking about over here, what he's plowing is not just regular dirt, we're talking about it's stones that are Mekuzolis. Now there are a few places in Shas. Rashi doesn't define it over here. Rashi just says bavonim means you can't use them for kisi adam. Kisi adam, you have to use dirt, powdery dirt. You can't use rocks. But there are some places in Shas where Rashi explains that mekuzolos means stones that are a little bit sharp at one end. For example, we learned in Masech Shabbos that on Shabbos a person's allowed to use them for wiping after he goes to the bathroom. So Tosfos says it's not that then if that was the case, then the shape of them is not relevant for Argamar over here. So Tosfos explains that rather in all those places, including here, Mekuzolos means soft. They're a little bit soft. You could conceivably plant around among them, but if you wanted to use them for kisi adam, you would have to crush them into dirt first. It would, yeah, if you covered it. Yeah, if you could, no, that's the thing. They're not stones per se. Think of them as more like sandstones or something. They're hard, but it's made up of sand compressed together or dirt compressed together. Yeah. So it is soft. You could break it apart and make it. And when the plant starts growing, it's going to come apart and promote the growth of the plant. But right now, in terms of kisi adam, you can't use it for kisi adam because it's not loose earth. So therefore, even if you said hoyo, he could be chayiv because hoyo wouldn't apply over here. The question is ruuyas lekoistron. So what? So you could crush them on Yom Tov. What do you mean? Ksi should be Yom Tov mishori. Nu, would you be allowed to crush them on Yom Tov? That itself would be a malacha. Well, it would be one of the malachas. The same way, the same 39 malachas that apply on Shabbos apply on Yom Tov. We allow them for malachas eichel nefesh, but crushing clods of dirt is not one of them. So how can you say, what do you mean you could crush them? The fact is you're not allowed to. Okay, the answer is ruuyas lekoistron kalacha yad. Okay, you could crush them kalacha yad, which wouldn't be an isur daraisa. Again, all of this is based on if we say hoyo, that since you could crush them, kalachayad, and hoil, that then they would be usable for covering dam sipper, then according to Rabba's logic, then he shouldn't be getting malchus for plowing on Yom Tov. So the one answer is fine. What we're talking about is betsunma. We're talking about that this is hard ground, so you can't use it for kisi adam. Well, then the question is, Sunma Bazriya, nu, then you can't plant in it either. So what's he plowing for when we're talking about he's planting Kilayim and he's planting on Shemitah, etc.? The answer is, Sunma Milamayla va'ofatichoyach Milamata. The case is, let's say, that there is hard ground above, but then below the surface, there is softer dirt. So therefore, so that the top layer is not plantable, but you can plow through it and get to the soft dirt underneath, and you can plant in that. Nu, the Gemara says, v'tipu klei mishum ofer tichoyach. Well, then we're back to the same thing. Since there's loose dirt underneath, you could use that for kisi adam, so hoyol should apply. Elo ama marbet of ashi v'tina. So rather, Rav Ashi says, what we're talking about over here, it's not talking about a hard ground at all, and not talking about avonim mekorzolus, as we said before. What we're talking about is that it's clay ground. It's ground that has the consistency of clay. So again, the question is, so you can't use it for kisei adam. So again, the question is, v'tina bazriya hu. So you can't plant in that either. It's not suitable for planting. The answer is b'mesunta. We don't mean it's actually like clay. We mean it's wet ground. Sometimes it could be dry, and then when it's dry, it could be used for kisei adam. But right now, it's all wet and muddy, so you could plant in it. But on the other hand, you can't use it for kisei adam. So Rabbah would understand that the Mishnah is talking about that kind of case. So hoyol doesn't apply because you can't use that muddy dirt for kisei adam. You can only use loose dirt. So no, the point is that as you go deeper, also it's going to be muddy. It's going to be muddy and wet. So therefore, when he's plowing, and even if he could go deeper, the fact is he didn't. We're talking about the actual plowing that he did was in the muddy ground. So therefore, there's nothing that he could use for kisei adam. So hoyol doesn't apply. So therefore, we can get Malkus for plowing on the Yom Tov. But you're right, in other words, according to Rabbah, if the ground was regular loose dirt, then in fact you could potter him from one Malkus on the grounds of Hoyle. Okay. So it was a good question, but yeah, we have an answer yet. I mean, we see Rabbah himself didn't give the answer. We see that Rapapa Bar Shmuel gave the answer, and then Ma'abar Rav Ashi gave the answer. So maybe Taka, maybe Rabbah in his time couldn't find an answer, and it was left to other Chachamim to find it. I don't know. Okay. Esve Abaye. Then Abaye says to Rabbah, I have a question on you. We learn in a Mishnah, here's another one of these examples where a person can be doing one action and be chayav multiple malchus for it. Hamavashal gidanosha b'cholav v'yomtiv. One second. Okay, so the Mishnah says, here's another one of those examples where a person can be chayav multiple malchus for one action. Hamavashu gidanosha b'cholav v'yomtiv. If a person cooks gidanosha in milk on yomtiv v'oichloy and then he eats it loike chamish, then he's getting five malchus. Loike mishum avashu gid b'yomtiv. He's getting malchus because he cooked the gidanosha on yomtiv. Now, again, cooking is allowed on yomtiv, but only when you can eat it. Here you can't eat it, so therefore he's chayav malchus for that. He's getting malchus for eating the gidanasha. The loike mishum avashal basa b'cholav. He's getting malchus for cooking basa b'cholav. Now this is according to the opinion that yesh begidin menos in tam. We've talked about before in the previous parak that there's a machloikus all over Shas whether gidim have a flavor or not. If we say they don't, then they're not considered basa. So then cooking the gidanosha with milk wouldn't be chayav for basa v'cholav because it has no flavor of meat. But if we say yesh begidin nice and tam, then he would be chayav. The Mishnah that we're quoting over here is going according to that opinion that it is considered basa, and therefore he's chayav for cooking basa v'cholav. The loike mishum oichel basa v'cholav. He's also getting malchus for eating basa v'cholav. Same idea. The loike mishum. So that's the fourth one. The loike mishum ha'ara. And the fifth one is he's getting malchus for making a fire on Yom Tov. Well, if the fire was on before, then obviously not. But the point is, the Mishnah is explaining that there is a scenario where you could be getting five malchus for this one thing. So, actually, Tosfos points out again, we have the machlokas b'shamabes hillel about whether we apply mitoich. If we say mitoich, then he can't be getting malchus for making the fire anyway, because again, mitoich shahutra latzorach, hutra nami shalay latzorach. Once something is allowed for malachas eichel nefesh and yomtiv, then that same malacha is mutter for other purposes as well, and therefore, so you can't be chayav malchus for making the fire. No. So it's not that we're considering glasa b'chol of oichel nefesh. What we're saying is the cooking he can be chayav for, because he cooked something which is osir. There we can't say mitoich. But making the fire, the same fire, could be used afterwards for something else, and or it doesn't even have to. The same fire could be used just to warm himself up, let's say, by. This hillel would allow a person to make a fire on yomtiv for that purpose. So, right. So he's a loka mishum havara. Now, so the point is, havara and bishul are two different malachas. Now, we're going to talk soon in the Gemara the question of, we know that on Shabbos, if a person is over on different malachas, if a person does different malachas on Shabbos, then he has to bring separate chatois for it. We learned about that in Shabbos. Person is mechal Shabbos b'shogeg. He doesn't know it's Shabbos, or he doesn't know these things, or he doesn't know these things on malachas, and he does, let's say, five different malachas, and he's bringing five different chatois. Do we say the same thing as far as yomtiv? Now, yomtiv, there's no chatas, because there's no issur kares. But yomtiv, the question would be malchus. Do we say the same thing, that there's chiluk malachas for yomtiv? That itself is an argument in the Gemara, which we're going to be discussing on the next amud. So here, we're assuming at this point that we're saying chiluk malachas the yomtiv. Therefore, he's getting malchus separately for the bishul and for the havara. Again, the havara only according to Beis Shammai, but fine. The point is, it is two separate malachas, and he's getting separate malchus for them. Whereas if we said, ein chiluk malachas the yomtiv, if we said that when it comes to yomtiv, no matter how many malachas he does, he's only getting one malchus, then you don't have that fifth one anyway. It means one set of 39. Now, Abaya says to Rava, the Iyamin and Hoyle. Now, if we hold of the concept of Hoyle, then Ahavara loyla chayev, then he shouldn't be chayev for Ahavara Hoyle the Chazi loyla tzok, because, like we just said, you could use the fire for some other purpose which is usable on Yomtiv. You could use it to cook something else, for example. So according to Basila, you don't even need to cook with it. You could be using it to warm up by. But even according to Bishamai, fine, you're not allowed to make it in order to cook this Gidan Nasha B'cholav, but you're allowed to make this the same fire you can use afterwards to cook other things. So why is he chayev for making the fire? Amalei, so Rabbi says, you're right. Apik Havara, what we actually have to do is we have to take out Havara from this list over here, Va'ayo Gidan Nasha Shal Nevela. And instead, insert that we're talking about this was the Gidan Nasha of a Nevela. So now when he's eating it, he's also over on the Issur of Nevela. Again, if we say Yesh Begidin Menoisin Tam, if we say In Begidin Menoisin Tam, then it's not considered eating Nevela. No, because of what Hoyo? You can't say Hoyo. No, it doesn't work. Hoyle doesn't work like that, it could have been a kosher. First of all, there's no such thing as a kosher Gidan Asher. Second of all, no. Hoyle's saying, if you're doing something, and right now it's also, but there is a scenario, if there's a scenario under which this thing could be mutter. For example, you're baking on yomtiv. Right now, you don't need the food, but Hoyle, that guests could show up, and therefore it's something that's going to be eaten on yomtiv, then you're allowed to. There's no way. Once the Gidan Asher is from Nevela, there's no way to make it from a shota. The Hoyle doesn't apply to such a thing. Yeah. So therefore, take out Havara. And in fact, Tosfos mentions the Gemara is going to point out later that anyway, ein chiluk malachas the yomtiv, that we don't necessarily say that a person does multiple malachas on yomtiv that he should be chayav multiple malachas. So for that reason alone, we should be taking out Havara. So therefore, instead, we'll put in that it was an nevela. The problem with that is, v'hatani Rav Chia, when he summarizes the Mishnah, and says, loikin shtayim alachilosev eshalash abishuloi, the five malchus breaks down into two malchus for the eating, and three for the cooking. So we said, because he's getting malchus for cooking on yomtiv, for cooking vasim cholov, and for havara, which is three things that have to do with the cooking process, only if it's from malachas echel nefesh. This you're not allowed to eat. So therefore he's getting three malchus for those, and then he's getting two malchus for eating, one because it was Gidan Asher, and one because it was Bas V'Cholav. Now, if you're telling me that we're taking out Havara and putting in Nevela, the Isa, Shalosh Alachilosim Ebele, then it comes out, it's the other way around, it's three for the eating, and two for the cooking. Three for the eating, because Bas V'Cholav, Gidan Asher, and Nevela. So it doesn't work. Ella, you're right. apik havora v'ayo ase mukta. Rather, what you have to do is take out havora and instead put in that the wood that he used was wood that was mukta. So now there's no hoyol. Now there's no hoyol. There's no if guests were to come or something, then it would be. It was mukta before Yom Tov. So and we're assuming for this purpose that this concept of mukta is daraisa, because otherwise you can't be chayav malchus for it. Which leads to the question: what do you mean a mukta daraisa? What do you mean is the concept of mukta daraisa? So Rabbah says yes, to a certain degree. Now the concept of that you're not allowed to handle mukta and you're not allowed to pick it up and take it from one place to another, that's definitely drabanan. But we're talking about you using something mukta on Yom Tov. For example, the classic case at the beginning of Masechta Beitza, an egg that was laid on Yom Tov, which is considered noilad, can we say that eating it on Yom Tov would actually be an issur d'oraisa? So Rabbah says yes. And the same thing over here. This wood was mukta before Yom Tov because you had it set aside. You're going to sell it or whatever. And now instead you take it and use it on Yom Tov. Then yes, it's considered mukta. It's using mukta, and such a thing is also d'oraisa. So he says, "Ein, yes, dichtiv, because you have by the mon." The pasuk says, "V'hoya b'yom hashishi," on the sixth day, "V'heichinu es hashem yaviu." They should prepare what they're going to bring. In other words, you have to actually designate and say that this thing I'm going to use for Shabbos. Otherwise, otherwise it's not mezuman. You have other mishnayos and beitza that describe similar kinds of things. For example, let's say it talks about if you have birds in a birdhouse that you want to take some of those birds and shech them and eat them on Yom Tov, then you have to designate them before Yom Tov that you're planning to take them. So Rabbah is saying the fact that you have to do that is actually daraisa. So therefore, if you're over on it, then it's a malacha daraisa. And now that would only be an essay. A person can't get malchus for being over on an essay. So where is the azhara? Where's the warning? It's another malacha. In other words, he would say it's considered just like for example, a person can get malchus, as we said, for cooking on Yom Tov or making a fire or any of the other, or plowing or any of the other malachas that a person might do on Yom Tov, which are not l'tzorech ha'echol nefesh. So the same thing. This using something that was not mukhan before Yom Tov would be usur under the general loisase of loisase komalacha. Amalei, so Abaya says that doesn't work. How could you say that mukta is usur midaraisa on Yom Tov or on Shabbos? Vaha atu da'amit, you Rabbah yourself said, ba'oy minei mirav huna, that you yourself said, I once asked Rav Chista, or some say, he says, I asked Rav Huna, hevi seme afer, what if a person took a sheep that was out in the meadows before Yom Tov, where the Mishnah tells us at the end of Beitza that such field, the Mishnah tells us at the end, Afa means like the meadows. So it was grazing out in the meadows before Yom Tov. It wasn't Mukhan. You didn't designate before Yom Tov that you planned to shecht it. And the last Mishnah in Beitza tells us that such animals are Mukhtzeh, and you're not allowed to shecht them on Yom Tov even if they come into the town. It was in Rambam Perakachon recently. We also had something about an Eruvin. So the shechta tomid be Yom Tov, and then you shechted it as the korban tomid on Yom Tov. Mahu, what would be the din? Are you allowed to, having shechted it, are you allowed to offer it on the mizbeach? V'at amritlon, and you, Rabbah, answered, Omer li, that Rav Chista or Rav Huna answered me, that in fact you are allowed to, Omer li Allah. So he says like this, We learn in a braisa, and they have like this. There's a pasuk in Yechezkel. Yechezkel is describing the korbanos in the third Beis Hamikdash, Shibanim Meher of Yemen. He mentions a lot of dinim about korbanos, which not all of them seem to fit with what we know about korbanos, and there's different explanations. We're talking about korbanos miluim, we're talking about special korbanos that will be because the world is going to be on a higher level the Beis Hamashiach. But the Gemara assumes in as much as possible that we're talking about dinim of korbanos that apply nowadays, also that apply to the first and second Beis Hamikdash as well, and just the regular dinim of korbanos, and just Yechezkel is writing them down for us. So he has an expression, there's a positive quote, he says over there, v'seh achas minatzoy minamasayim, one sheep from the flock, from the 200, mimashke Yisrael, from what Jewish people can drink. So the simple meaning of the positive, Mepharshim explain, is in other words, v'imoyis HaMashiach, there's going to be a special thing where one out of every 200 sheep has to be brought as a korban. But the Gemara, again, is understanding that we're talking about a din of korbanos that applies in all times, whenever korbanos are brought. And therefore, we darshan that phrase by phrase. when the pasuk says seh, implies v'loy habachur. The word seh means to exclude. You cannot use a bachur for a korban sibur. Why? Rashi says the word seh means both zachar and nekeva. A bachur can only be a zachar. So therefore, by saying the word seh, in effect, the pasuk is saying a korban has to be something. A korban, any other kind of korban, has to be something which could conceivably be both male and female. Now, lemaisa, Tosfos says, I mean, an oila can only be an oila can't be a female anyway. But the point is, in other words, that the point is that the word seh teaches us that it has to be. At least in theory, the designation that this thing has could have been it could have been a zachar or a nekeva, and a bechor is by definition only a zachar. So therefore, that excludes a bechor. Achas, when the pasuk continues one, means veloy meiser, means you can't use an animal of meiser behema, because echad implies that's one by itself, not that it's one out of ten like meiser is. Minatsoin, when it says from the sheep, which is a miut, implying not all the sheep, veloy apalgus, so it means you cannot bring as a korban a palgus, which is an animal which is, a palgus means sort of half, but what it means is it's an animal that's too old to be a sheep in halacha, but too young to be a ram. The definition in halacha is, up to 12 months old, it's called a sheep, it's called a lamb. For example, you can bring it to the for a korban Pesach. More than 13 months old or older is called an ayil, a ram. And you can bring it for a certain carbonus that require a ram. In between, it's called a palgus, and you can't bring it for either one. I mean, you could bring it as a carbon, but you're not yotze as a sheep or as a ram. So therefore, so the word minatzoin teaches us that you can't bring a palgus for the carbon chamid. Mina mosayim, then when the pasuk continues from the 200, now that can't be talking about animals anymore, because where do you have 200 in connection with animals? So here now we're talking about the nesachim. It means mimoser shtei meis shenishtayru b'bur. Means you have to, when can you bring nesachim? If you have 200 that are left in the pit that are mutter. Mikan la'orla shabatela b'mosayim. So from here we learn, let's say the wine was made from orla grapes, which is also to eat, and is also, which is also to eat or to have anah from, but it can be bottled in 200. So the pasuk is telling us, mina masayim, if you have a pit of wine where some of the wine in that pit is orla, as long as you have 200 times as much to be mevatel it, then you're allowed to be mevatel it, and then it's bottled, and then you can use that wine for nesachim. Mikama orla shabtele masayim, mimashki yisrael, and when the pasuk finishes off that you have to use mimashki yisrael from what Jewish people can drink, mina mutter yisrael, that means that all korbanos have to be things that are mutter for Jews to eat. Mikan omer ein mevi nesachim in a tevel. Based on this, the Chachamim said, for example, you can't bring nesachim from tevel. And you have many applications of this in many places in Shas where mimashki yisrael teaches us that if something is also to eat, then you're not allowed to bring it as a korban. So now, continues the Braisa. Now, so we're saying you can't bring Nesachim from Tevel, because you can't eat it, and it's not Mimashki Yisrael. Yochol lo yovi min ha-mukta. Now, you would think, continues the Braisa, that in that case, you can't use mukta either. Amauta, but you say, no, the difference is, ma Tevel miyuchad, she'isu gufoi goram loy, because the difference is, what's special about Tevel? What can we say is a characteristic of Tevel? The isu is intrinsic to it itself, the grain itself, whatever the grapes themselves, when Gemar Malacha was done to them, then they become chayiv and meiser, and they're considered tevel. There's no outside factor that makes them tevel. Af kol she'isru gufoi garam loy. So what is also for korbanos? Only things where there's an isru in the thing itself. Yotzah mukta she'ein isru gufoi garam loy ela isru darachah garam loy. As opposed to mukta, as an outside thing. You took this thing and you didn't. You sent it out of the city, or you put it in your storage place, or whatever. Or like these animals, you sent them out to graze in the field, and you didn't designate before Yom Tov that you planned to shech them. So now, so we see, in other words, that mukta is not also for korbanos. So therefore, the answer would be that yes. So the answer to the original question that Rabbah asked Rav Huna or Rav Chista would be that yes, if you're not supposed to take an animal mina afer and shecht it for the korban tamid, but if you did, then it's still kosher and you can offer it as a korban. But Abaya is saying the amut isur mukta daraisa. If you're telling me that the isur of mukta is daraisa, mali isur gufoi, mali isur davaracha, then who cares whether it's an isur gufoi or isur davaracha? Either way, it's an isur on it. So how can you say that the isur of mukta is daraisa? Then that would contradict what we just said, that mukta is able, but the evid, to be brought as a korban. the oid ha atu de amat chiluk malachas l'shabbos vein chiluk malachas l'yamdiv. So besides which, you yourself also, Rabbah, said that, like we said before, there is chiluk malachas l'shabbos. If a person does five different malachas on Shabbos behelam echad, then he's chayav five chatois. But on the other hand, with Yom Tov, it's not like that. If a person was given Hasra about five different malachas and Yom Tov, and he does them, he's only getting one malchus. Because ein chiluk malachas to Yom Tov. When it comes to Yom Tov, we don't say that each malacha has its own penalty. So, and yet, you're saying that the Mishnah that we quoted before is mechayevim for two different malachas and Yom Tov, for cooking and for making a fire. So it doesn't fit even with your own opinion. So how can you say that he's chayev because he used wood of mukta? Number one, that it doesn't fit with what we're saying, that mukta is not considered an isu gufa. If it was midaraisa, then it wouldn't make a difference. The question is on Rabbah. Rabbah is saying that we apply hoyl, and the question was, therefore, how can he be chayev for havara? Shouldn't we say hoyl and he's potter? And Rabbah had answered that you're right, we're not talking about havara. The problem is that he used wood that's mukta. The problem is, in that case, first of all, wood that's mukta, you're saying it's also daraisa, but based on what we just learned, it seems that it's not. And number two, you have to ask, if you're saying that he's chayev for using wood of mukta, then it means you're being chayev for two different malachas of Yom Tov. And we know that when it comes to Yom Tov, you yourself, Rabbah, hold that when it comes to Yom Tov, we don't say chiluk malachas. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with how we're going to answer that. With how we're going to answer that, and how Rabbah is going to defend his position. Okay.